I would ask Mr. Mishick and Mr. Gunderson to turn on their videos. Great. Thank you. Our last case this morning is 823-0387, State of Minnesota versus, if I pronounce this right, Heather Wurzberger. As all parties are aware, this is our first day of live streaming. There will be an audio recording of this oral argument available tomorrow. However, our court rules prohibit anyone from making a separate video recording of this, so I would ask that that be respected. Counsel for the appellant will have 15 minutes for their argument. Counsel for the respondent will have 15 minutes. And finally, counsel for the appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. So counsel for the appellant, whenever you're ready, just begin and tell us who you are in a loud voice, please.
Thanks. My name is Christopher Mishick, and I'm representing Heather Wurzberger.
Go right ahead.
Thanks, and may it please the court. Mrs. Wurzberger pleaded guilty to second-degree burglary for entering a building with the intent to steal items on February 25th, 2021. Two other co-defendants were with her, and they were charged for that incident. At the plea hearing, Ms. Wurzberger admitted only to entering the home's back porch with an intent to steal items while having a flashlight. She did not admit to taking any items from the house, and no property was found on her at the scene. Despite this, she was ordered to pay over $300,000 in restitution for missing comic books and collectibles that others had taken in the weeks prior, before her offense. The district court erred here in ordering Wurzberger to pay restitution because under the statute, she's only liable for the economic losses that are directly caused by the offense. The $300,000 in losses occurred before February 25th due to others' actions. The court's use of the joint and several restitution law to make Wurzberger liable for prior burglaries really was an impermissible bypass of the direct causation standard under the statute and under case law and Botcher.
Let me ask you this. Do you agree, Mr. Mishick, that the losses here, that specifically the theft of the comic books that occurred during this month in the February of 2021 created indivisible losses for this victim?
Yes, I mean, yes. So at a certain point, it's not possible to determine whether or not, or you know, who in particular stole each comic book.
So your argument is really the Betcher argument that because the offense to which your client pleaded guilty was burglary, not theft, that's why she's not responsible or cannot be held responsible for the restitution as it vis-a-vis the theft of the comic books.
That's right. And I'd also just point factually to the cases that we're discussing in our briefs about indivisible loss. I mean, if you look at Miller, that's the case where people are, there's multiple people assaulting the same person. We know in Miller that the defendant was there, and the defendant in Miller admitted to actually striking the defendant or the victim. So in that case, it was hard to parse out, you know, which blow landed when and what injury was caused by which person. But there was a factual record in that case of the defendant admitting, yeah, I was there and I hit him. Here, you know, in contrast, there isn't a factual record of Ms. Wurzberger saying, yeah, I was involved in those prior burglaries. And that's
doesn't,
really...
Doesn't... Oh, go ahead.
Counsel, what are we to make of the search of her home with the boxes of her comic books and jars of silver coins? And they weren't found on her person, and she didn't admit to theft. But are we allowed to extrapolate from what was going on there?
Well, I'd note a couple things. So factually, her son, TWK, was a suspect. And, you know, in the complaint, they talk about TWK actually taking the comic books and pawning them at pawn shops, along with another suspect or another person who's convicted of it, CK, who also admitted to it. TWK was Miss Wurzberger's son and lived with her. So I think factually that's potentially why the comic books were there. But I don't think you can extrapolate just from the fact that they're in her house to, you know, restitution and direct causation. You know, she again, it was never an admitted fact on the record. They never established it at the plea hearing. And that's one of the problems. It's just kind of laying out there in some of the discovery. And it was never discussed at the plea hearing to create an actual factual record.
Well, why is that important given your client's agreement to be responsible for restitution along with these other defendants, including the two you just mentioned who are identified in the complaint? Why isn't that sufficient to authorize the court to award joint and several restitution against her?
Well, our position is that it isn't clear that she agreed to this restitution. If you look at the actual record and how it went in, I mean, first of all, there's no plea petition, which is a problem because nothing's in writing. But the way the attorney described the deal, he said, you know, on page 3 of the plea hearing, he said, and quote, and any restitution would be joint and several with co-defendants. And I think really any, the word any is key here. I mean, it indicates that it's possible that there won't be restitution. And then there was the attorney's behavior after, you know, filing a motion and saying, you know, about 1 month after sentencing, he disputed that the damage was the result of Ms. Wurzburger's actions. And then he also said, quote, it was not agreed upon in her factual basis.
Let me all ask you this then. The sentencing hearing, right, to me is relevant in the sense that defense counsel at that point said, yeah, we got to hold off on restitution because we don't know how many more of these comic books are going to be found, how many on the state's list. I mean, doesn't that sort of support? I mean, I agree with the record is not as clear, and there's reference in the plea agreement to a plea petition, but it was never filed with the court. I mean, this was everything happened by Zoom at this point. But isn't that reference in the sentencing hearing pretty good indication that your client contemplated being responsible for restitution associated with the comic books themselves?
Well, I think contemplated is different than agreed. You know, if there are all these comic books out there, people didn't know the value, there's other people potentially involved. I think at that point, the attorney was just saying, let's kick this down the road, let's get more facts. And then when there were more facts, the attorney actually made an explicit challenge on the direct causation level. But the other thing is, I'd ask you to contrast this with the Kennedy case that the state brought up. You know, in Kennedy, there was, you know, a large scheme, a land kind of swindle scheme, and he agreed to plead to a couple counts out of many. And then at sentencing, it became pretty clear that, you know, and the judge, everyone talked about it at sentencing, that he was going to be liable for all the other damages. And he had pled guilty to a very large kind of scheme involving, you know, tons of victims. So I think in Kennedy, it was clear at sentencing, okay, he was agreeing to this. Here, again, I don't think it's clear. Contemplated doesn't mean agreed.
What do you think she was agreeing to?
I think she was agreeing to potential restitution related to the event that she was at on February 25th. There could have been damages from the home.
But I mean, how would she? But the event she was at, it's my understanding nothing was stolen at that event. Would that be a fair statement?
That's a fair statement. Yeah, that's a fair statement.
So she must have been agreeing to restitution from some other event, and the only other events were the events that you've been referencing. So I guess, you know. I understand your argument, but I have a hard time understanding. Well, I was not agreeing to joint restitution because, well, then I just don't understand what she was agreeing to then, if it wasn't the other events.
Well, so a couple of things. I think, you know, lots of times when there are pleas like this, it is a little unclear what restitution is going to be. But I think that, you know, she could expect that the courts would follow Botcher when she pled, that she was agreeing to anything that directly caused losses.
What about the footnote in Botcher that says this is limited to trials? Plea agreements are different. So, I mean, so, what are we to make of that?
Yeah, so the way I read that footnote is that Botcher was saying that principles with guilty pleas are inapplicable to trials. I don't think the court was saying that the principle it was talking about, direct causation, was inapplicable to guilty pleas. I think what the court was saying there was that in certain guilty pleas, there are expressed agreements, like the one in Kennedy, for a defendant to pay for restitution for dismissed or uncharged conduct, when there's no, maybe even no factual record of that. But the agreement, but I think the principle in Kennedy is that the agreement has to be spelled out. You know, the defendant has to be there. That's really the right way to do it, is to go on the court and say, okay, Mrs. Wurzberger, you know, you're pleading guilty here, and the agreement here is for you to pay restitution on all these burglaries that occurred in the house. Do you understand that? And to get that in the record, and that was not in the record here.
Right. But I mean, it is. I agree. I would have more sympathy for your argument if the state was seeking restitution for uncharged conduct. But here they're seeking restitution in, I understand it, in other cases, but not just charged conduct, but or convicted conduct. And so, you know, again, I'm not so sure she didn't know what was going on. I agree with Judge Berkman, and I agree with you. I mean, the record could always be clearer, you know, and then hearings would go on for days. But, you know, this is what we have. And explain to me in this case where she is being held accountable, agreed to be held accountable for joint and restitution, and we have other convicted conduct, which clearly resulted in these comic books being taken. Explain to me why she shouldn't be held jointly and severably liable under these facts.
Well, because she didn't agree to it. There was not an expressed agreement. You know, and that's what I think Kennedy says, is that, you know, for this to happen where someone's agreeing to restitution, where it's not directly related to the crime of conviction, that it has to be spelled out. And I do want to kind of go back, though, to what I was saying something earlier. I mean, I think that there were potential restitution items from the event on the 25th. I mean, if something was broken when she went in the back porch, if there, you know, sometimes victims get burglar alarms after certain things. I know he had an alarm from the police. So I don't think it's impossible for restitution to happen out of the 25th incident. And again, I go back to her attorney's, you know, motions right within a month after sentencing, in him saying that this is not what was agreed to. This is, you know, she didn't enter a factual basis for this.
What's the significance of the fact that this came before the district court as part of a joint restitution hearing with defendants who were convicted with respect to, I think, the February, well, an earlier February burglary? I mean, doesn't that further support the district court's, I guess, implicit determination that your client contemplated and agreed to be responsible for restitution with these other parties for the indivisible losses?
I don't think I'd go that far. I mean, the other thing I note is that the two other men with Wurzberger on the night of the 25th were initially part of that restitution hearing, and then they, for some reason, I don't know why, it was, the restitution was dismissed on their part. So I think
they have comic books found in their homes like your client did.
No, they didn't. But it's
does the record indicate where the client? Because I understand your argument that, well, you know, her son lives there. This was his deal. Does the record indicate where the comic books and the jars of coins were found?
They do. Well, so the record indicates from the Florence hearing packet that the son, her one of her other sons, I think a teenage son, alleged that the room that they were found in or immediately next to the room was Ms. Wurzberger's. Yes.
Well, that's a problem, isn't it?
Again, this
I mean,
isn't.
That just takes it away for like, I didn't know what was going on. I was trying to return the comic books. I'm the good person. I mean, I don't know.
Well, so a couple of things. So the comic books stolen or the comic books that ended up in her basement, those were returned. So if I don't think there's any claim that there was a diminution of value in those. And again, I don't think it necessarily links her to other burglaries that happened before at other times. There's other defendants admitting that they completed or that they did those burglaries and that they took the comic books on those times.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mishick. You will have rebuttal. We'll now hear from counsel. Thanks. For the respondent, please. You're welcome.
Your Honors, may it please the court. My name is Paul Gunderson. I am an assistant Brown County attorney, and I represent the state of Minnesota, who is the respondent in this matter. As the court has just been addressing, the appeal issue here is a restitution order where appellant was ordered to pay restitution joint and severally liable with co-defendants.
Also, I have a question, an initial question. We were told just a few minutes ago there was no plea petition. This was a felony plea to burglary in the second degree, and there was no written petition.
That is correct, Your Honor. There was an oral recitation of what the plea agreement was. All parties.
I understand that. But are you telling me Brown County doesn't use plea petitions, written ones, for felonies?
Your Honor, that is not the standard practice in Brown County. I was not the trial attorney in this matter, so I can't speak to that specific issue. I would say, though, that this was going on during 2021. And I think that there is a reference, perhaps at the sentencing hearing, that the attorney for appellant tried to send a plea petition, but it was not returned. And that's why it was not filed in this case.
You're telling me it's not the usual course down there to use plea petitions?
That's my understanding. It does happen occasionally, to be frank, to the court, but that is not the standard practice, Your Honor.
All right. Counsel, as long as I have you, I mean, I want to get to the crux of at least what I consider the crux. What does enmeshed mean exactly?
Well, in this case, the court did use that specific term. And I understand appellant's argument that is very similar to factually related. However,
the court used that in paragraph 40 of its findings.
It did, Your Honor. In paragraph, I believe it's 38 of its findings, however, it did find that appellant was connected to the prior burglaries, which is much closer to the direct causation type of language from Boettcher. It's also closer to the restitution statute that says as a result of a crime. So the court did make that finding that she was not only connected to the burglary on February 25th, but also that she was connected to the prior burglaries that involved her son. And the evidence for that connection, the district court cited, was that the comic books and rare coins were found at her home. There was also totes in her home where that stolen property was located that were similar in nature to the totes that were found in a vehicle she was driving on February 25th. That's the date of the incident of the burglary that she admitted. So
just to be clear, when we get back to the directly caused by or follow naturally as a consequence of, if I'm hearing you correctly, you're not suggesting enmeshed does that, but you're saying paragraph 38, when it mentions the connecting, does.
Your Honor, enmeshed could be used to say that it is directly caused. However, I don't think that that's the part of the order that the court should be focused on. I think that the paragraph 38, where the court actually does say connected to the prior burglaries, is the proper focus. Your Honors, I did want to address, I guess, the argument that the court was dealing with Mr. Mishek. And in the appellant's brief, reply brief rather, there is an argument that the respondent has forfeited the argument that she expressly agreed to the restitution in this matter. And there, I just wanted to point the court to the respondent's brief before the district court. That's document number 54. There is a line on page 4, and I quote, defendant also agreed to pay restitution as a part of her plea agreement. This statement,
Mr. Gunderson, I agree with you. I saw numerous references in the record to the appellant's agreement. So I don't think that's a compelling argument. But getting past the did you make the argument? I mean, why should we conclude that the appellant agreed to restitution beyond that associated with the act of breaking into the porch? What is it about the record that should compel that conclusion?
Her, the language that was used at the plea hearing is much more specific than what occurred in the principal case on this issue, State v. Kennedy. In State v. Kennedy, the agreement was described as shall pay restitution or something similar to that. And this is what was later disputed after the sentencing hearing as to whether or not that included uncharged or dismissed counts. In this case, the language that was used was joint and several liability with the co-defendants. That is much more specific. Case law uses those terms in a specific manner.
But who are the co-defendants? The people that she was arrested with on February 25th? The other people, including her son, who are referenced in the complaint? How do we know what she understood her co-defendants to be?
I would say the answer to both of your questions is yes. It would include the individuals who are arrested simultaneous to her. It would also include her son, as well as CK, which is referenced. All of those are referenced in the complaint. And this is the approach that the district court took. There were extensive findings.
When you say in the complaint, you mean the complaint she pled to?
Yes, Your Honor. And the district court did draw from that complaint, did draw findings of fact to indicate that these were co-defendants. As I mentioned before, there's that language that she was connected to these prior burglaries with her son, even though her son was not one of the individuals who was arrested during the February 25th incident. So I did also want to address a little bit the circumstances of Kennedy and how actually in this case, the plea agreement was much more clear. The language was much more clear, but also in Kennedy, the court talked, or the court made a record at the sentencing hearing rather, that the restitution, I apologize. I lost my train of thought there. There was a statement by the appellant that the restitution claim became more clear after the sentencing hearing, but the record in this case indicates that the affidavit of restitution included $1 million claim at the time of sentencing. What became more clear is after that sentencing hearing and before the restitution hearing, there was actually a reduction of the restitution amount. So there was, I guess, a more clear record perhaps even than in Kennedy. I would also, I guess,
was at the plea hearing, did anyone give a number? like joint and several liability, and this could be up to $1 million. Did anybody like give a number?
There was not a number given specifically at the plea hearing. No, Your Honor. The affidavit of restitution was filed well ahead of sentencing, though. And I would point to the sentencing hearing where the district court actually asked each of the parties, did they receive a copy of this? And the response from appellant's attorney was yes, and we reviewed it. There was also a discussion during the sentencing argument that the amount might not be definite. There might be additional comic books that have been collected. So that indicates that the primary thrust, at least during the sentencing hearing, was whether or not the total amount was going to be the final after restitution hearing, rather than was this a direct causation of the appellant's conduct.
So at the sentencing hearing, I'm just trying to get a feel for what was said, and I suppose we can always look at the transcript, but I mean, someone is specifically saying, you know, restitution for stolen comic books. I mean, is that a fair statement?
And not like
what Mr. Mishra was suggesting, you know, it could have been the broken screen or a new burglar alarm. Well, I mean, were people mentioning it's the comic books that we're seeking restitution for?
Yes, there is a reference at the sentencing hearing to comic books by appellant's attorney. And I'm looking at page 4 of that sentencing hearing, I believe is where it appears. Yes, as for restitution goes, I just don't think we have enough information at this time as the true amount. I don't know if the state has any comic books in evidence that could be returned that are listed. So it's my request just to reserve that restitution. So, and there's another reference to returned comic books immediately below that as well. So that seems to be the primary issue at the sentencing hearing. And I would also remind the court that in Kennedy, the dispute as to whether or not the plea agreement included this type of, or the type of restitution that was sought, actually came up after the sentencing hearing as well. But then there was a later finding that the district court had actually addressed at the sentencing hearing, and the plea agreement did include uncharged or dismissed counts. Your Honors, I would also point as to the direct causation or as a result of language that this is a case of indivisible losses. There was a finding of fact that the district court made that stated that the victim, FM, could not make an accounting of every one of the burglaries in between each of the burglaries because of their quick succession, and also because of the sheer volume of his collection that was at issue. So this is that the line of cases that should be followed is the indivisible losses, which is State v. Johnson, as well as State v. Miller. And that is how the court should look at this particular case, or that should be the primary type of cases that the court should look at. And those can be distinguished from the more recent State v. Boettcher case. In that case, it was an underlying burglary that involved multiple individuals. However, there was no argument that it was indivisible losses because two of the co-defendants in that case actually testified at the hearing that it was Boettcher who started the fire rather than they. And because of that, and then in addition to that, the jury could not reach a verdict on the arson count, and it was not later pursued. So Boettcher does not deal with the indivisible losses that happened in this case, and therefore the court should look to Johnson and Miller. And in those cases, the joint and several liability issue is addressed, as should be addressed in this case. The appellant in this case actually agreed to joint and several liability, agreed to joint and several liability with co-defendants, and that terminology should be given meaning. When she agreed to that, it had to have meant something. I would also, going back to the forfeiture argument, just very briefly, I would point the court to State v. Gruning, which is found at 660 Northwest 2nd 134. I just wanted that to be a part of the argument. I believe that those principles may apply as well. But I don't have any other arguments at this time, unless the court has additional questions. I would just ask that the district court's order be affirmed in all respects.
Thank you. I don't believe the panel has any further questions. Mr. Mishick, you'll have the last word, sir.
Thanks. Just a couple points. I think, you know, looking at page or paragraph 38, and you know, where the judge talks about Ms. Wurzer being connected to the earlier burglaries. Again, I don't think connected is enough under the direct causation standard. Connected could mean she just knew about it, didn't necessarily participate in it. It's not a finding that she actually committed those prior burglaries. And I think it is more akin to like saying she's a meshed. Both of those findings that she's connected or a meshed go against kind of the principle in Botcher and in the statutory language of restitution, that it has to result from the actual crime. And again, the crime here is her February 25th conviction. She admitted to no other facts on the record establishing her participation in the prior burglaries or even the items in the basement of her house. All of this could have easily been done at a hearing, agreed upon for Kennedy, but none of it was done in its really kind of vague and not clear. So
then wouldn't the remedy be to reverse and remand, let her withdraw her guilty plea and let the state go ahead with all the charges as existed before the plea agreement?
No,
I mean, if what you're saying is she never agreed to this, then wouldn't that be where we should go?
Well, if she never agreed to it, then I mean, I disagree. No, I think it's not her responsibility to make the record clear and clean. I think she agreed to restitution, and she could have expected when she went into that agreement that the law under Botcher would be followed, or in the alternative, if the state was going to insist upon her paying other things of uncharged or dismissed charges, that it would have been explicitly dealt with in the record, like in Kennedy. I would push back, a little on the state on its representations of the sentencing hearing. The state recognized at the sentencing hearing that there were going to be restitution challenges, and it said, when they were deciding on picking a date going forward, it said something like, recognizing that Ms. Wurzberger did have challenges. So I don't think the restitution hearing is clear or makes everything clear, just like in Kennedy, that, oh, this was an agreed upon part of the plea. So I'm just trying to check if I have any more points before I let my time expire. Well, that's all I have, Your Honors. And I'd ask that you reverse and make her restitution zero in this case.
Thank you, Mr. Mishick. Thank you, Mr. Gunnarsson. That being our last case today, we will issue our decision in 90 days. We are now adjourned.